Welcome to the podcast, the Working Class Bowhunter podcast, that is. Hopefully, we're helping you get through your work week. And man, right now, there's just a whole lot of archery going on. For us, we're not too into fishing, not terribly into bow fishing, haven't done that in a while, but not a ton going on, but archery stuff. Our new elites are in. That's pretty cool. We're all shooting the Cure, Steve shooting the Ember, and we're pretty jacked up about that. So we're excited to like get into the archery thing again. And speaking of the whole archery thing, huge thank you and huge shout out to Galesburg Archery Club for last weekend at the shoot. An amazing turnout, especially when you factor in the whole COVID bullshit, the rainy weather, and Father's Day. We had 143 registered shooters, which is amazing. And then we had people that came just to hang out and have a good time, gave away a lot of prizes. So huge thank you to all the companies and teams and people that gave product and different prizes to give away to the shooters. That was really awesome. But really, you know, I was really worried about the rain the night before we were setting up the course, and it was just pouring rain on us. So we were really nervous about that. But it was such a great turnout. Nothing negative at all happened. Everyone was in good spirits. Everyone loved the course. Everyone just had a good time. It's exactly what you want out of friends and family and an archery shoot. It was awesome. And then I had like a little after party with the what I consider the working class family, and we did a crawfish boil. Shout out to Danielle and her husband for, man, they make some mean crawfish. Never done that before. So it was cool, man. So if you missed the shoot this year, we hope to see you next year. We're already talking about next year's shoot at the same club, same area, same course. We're gonna mix it up a little bit, make it different. So if you didn't make it, please come next year and hang out with us. We're gonna try and go for a non-holiday weekend, and it's hard to find that perfect weekend that works for everybody, but we're gonna do that. We're talking about making it 2 days. So let us know. Is 2 days too much, or is 1 day good? You just want to come in, hang out for a day, and go do other stuff. I don't know. Let us know what you think. And if you did go and you have pictures of it, send it to us. We like to collect all the pictures from every year. So that was really cool. So huge shout out to everyone that supported us for that. It was just a positive vibe weekend. Made us feel really good about what we do and the people that we're surrounded by, just in this whole outdoor community. The podcast is presented by HHA Sports. We have a code for them. It's WCB15. Steve and myself are shooting the Tetra this year. Doug and Eric are shooting the Tetra Max. The main difference between those, all HHA products, by the way, have lifetime warranty. So if you bust it, break it, whatever, you can get a new one. And it's all made from basically Midwest materials, American made, to support our veterans. So the difference between the Tetra and the Tetra Max, the main difference is you can switch out your yardage wheels with the Tetra Max. So if you're a guy that has this one arrow setup that you stick with and you're good, the Tetra's the site for you. If you like to mess around and do different things and don't really feel like, you know, putting a new sight tape on each time, maybe the Tetra Max is the one for you. You can have as many yardage wheels as you want. It's just a set screw, pop it off, pop a new one on. It's pretty awesome. So HHASports.com, code WCB15. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Scent Crusher. Man, Scent Crusher plays into so many different aspects of our hunting game and camping game and even just household situations with the room clean. If like my family does cloth diapers and we have a cat, so we double down and use the room clean for that. The Ozone Go in your truck every other day, every day. It all works out, especially at camping. Like last weekend, everyone had tents and just wet clothes and stuff from the rain, and you get that moldy, mildewy, wet smell in your car. You can run that Ozone Go and it fixes it. So check out Scent Crusher. Tell them we sent you. Also, Thermoseat. Thermoseat has its spot in spring hunting and fall hunting with the tree stand seats, or in the spring, you know, you have like the wedges, that the self-supported seats. So if you're turkey hunting and you're doing the whole run and gun thing for turkeys, you can pop it up in the middle of the woods and sit down comfortably off the ground. You're dry. It's awesome. Also, Victory Archery. This year, we all shot the RIP TKO last year. I think I'm going to shoot it again this year. I'm very, very happy with that arrow. Really, no complaints at all. I think Victory just makes a good arrow all around. So I'm going to rock the TKO, the RIP TKO again. So check them out, Victory Archery. Tell them we sent you. They have something for everyone. They really do. Gator Outdoors, lifestyle brand. If you don't follow Gator, I highly recommend doing it. They kind of give you that warm, like fuzzy feeling in the outdoor space. They're very like family oriented, very friend oriented. And go to GatorOutdoors.com. You can buy all your favorite brands there. And they have some great clothing themselves. Their merch is kind of like what makes them stand out alone. Like they have awesome t-shirts, a lot of true timber camo pattern shirts. So check them out, Gator Outdoors. Elite Archery. So this is cool. We got our cures in, and I got graphite gray. Doug got cobalt flame. Eric went with Realtree Extra, and Steve went with Realtree Extra. We have a new code for all outdoor group companies, even companies we're not directly like, you know, I'm doing the little finger quote thing, sponsored by. But we have a new code, WCB. It's simple, WCB. So if you're wanting to get a new Elite or get your wife an Elite or your kid or whatever, this is just something I plugged and I was playing with the code. The Elite Ember with the code WCB is $400 out the door, brand new. That is badass. I don't know if you can beat that price with a bow like that. It's adjustable, I think, from 10. Oh, hold on. I think, I don't have it with me here. I thought I had it in the studio. 10 to 60 pounds. That's insane. The cure, basically fully tunable from your backyard while you're shooting if you have an Allen wrench. It's badass. They're changing the game, and they're giving different styles of archers, different size of archers, they're meeting your needs as an archer. I'm not saying they're the best out there. There's a lot of great bows, but if you've ever thought about shooting an Elite, give it a run. You might really like it. I don't know. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but man, I do like my Elites. So there's something there. Big Time. They title sponsored the shoot. Huge. I think everyone left with a bag of Big Time seed. We loaded down our good buddy Shad. Well, Joe loaded Shad's truck down full of Big Time food plot seed, from Last Stand to Buck Brunch. And everyone, when they first got to the shoot, like, hey, thanks for coming, thanks for registering, grab some Big Time, take care of your deer herd. And they're like, what, how much are they? Oh, they're free, you're here, you registered, take a couple bags. And people are like, really? Oh shit, okay. So it was really cool to kind of get that seed out there and let them get it home, plant it, and see what Big Time's all about. And you can now buy Big Time at Cabela's and Bass Pro, which is a big, big deal for an awesome company, a good company with good people behind it. We're very proud to work with them. Joe Umphreys is our guy at Big Time. I mean, they're all our people at Big Time, right? But Joe's our main contact, and I consider him a really good friend, awesome dude. And I think he would never say this, but you can tell with how Joe is, he's so down to earth and so cool and relaxed, and he takes care of people and he just knows how to get the product out there, get the name out there, and do it in an organic, comfortable way. I think he's a huge factor in Big Time success, especially over the last year, man. They've just exploded. Old Barn Taxidermy. Love that group of people. Sam Gaylord, the owner of Old Barn, is probably one of my favorite people on the planet. And you know, we always talk about like we have good relationships with our sponsors, and we do. And that helps. You know, I can talk about it as a customer, as someone who believes in what they're doing. I definitely think if you can get an animal to Old Barn Taxidermy, do it. And we have a podcast coming up probably next week with Old Barn Taxidermy. So that's really cool. A real fun episode. They were in studio with Johnny Utah, and we kind of talk about the business and taxidermy and bear wieners and all sorts of stuff. It, you know, anything can happen. Hunter's Blend Coffee and Can Cooker. Thank you guys. All our awesome sponsors, and thank you for listening. But yeah, man, it was awesome. We have so this podcast. I'm kind of by myself drinking a Busch Light for the record, and I realize I'm rambling, but the business has to get done. But this podcast was a road trip podcast on our way to Wyoming Bear Camp, and Clint Casper, Austin Chandler, Ross Bigger, and myself were all riding in Ross's Duramax on the way out, and I was like, all right, let's do a podcast. So we did a couple road trip podcasts. I have another one that I'm going to launch it. I got to re-listen to it. It's one of those, like in podcasting, sometimes you just go. And if you don't launch it right away, you kind of forget what you talked about. I know I went on some rants, so I'll probably launch it as a bonus episode. I watched some outdoor shows that I've ranted on in the past, and I was just kind of like, man, I got some things to say. So I went on a rant and everybody looked at me like I was an idiot. But I'll probably launch that as a bonus episode or maybe between this episode and the old barn one. I don't know. I'm not sure what I want to do, but I got to listen to it. It'll be fun. But yeah, this is a road trip one. We talked all whitetails, from antlers, what your perfect whitetail is, what your dream whitetail is, just anything and everything whitetails. This is what I would just call a legitimate road trip hunting podcast, just as real as it gets, not knowing what we're going to talk about and just letting it fly.
I'm Chase Rolfson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T-Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
Hey, this is Jules McQueen, and you are listening to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast.
It's really, really not that good.
Working Class Bowhunter.
All right, we are doing the first of possibly many podcasts in the road trip series on the way to Wyoming Bear Camp. Just so everybody knows, we are driving through Des Moines, Iowa right now, so we're fairly early in our trip. We just passed the Lumberyard Strip Club. If you're from the Midwest area, you might enjoy a nice gentleman's afternoon there. If you've ever been to Iowa Classic with us, you know that's a tradition of ours. Welcome to the Road Trip Podcast. We have Ross Bigger, the pilot, up front.
Right on.
We got Austin Chandler, co-pilot.
What's up, guys?
We got the maniac, Clint Casper, back here.
Gang, gang.
And then we got myself, and we are cruising along, man. Stopped at the rest stop, got the podcast gear set up in the truck, and we're going for it. So if there's some road noise, you know, it's legit. We're riding. So what's up, fellas?
Not much, man.
Not much.
We're stuck together for the next 15 hours or so.
Yep.
Actually, like 7 days, 8 days. Yeah,
and that, yeah.
And that, yeah.
For sure. I figured, you know, we're going to do plenty of bear camp podcasts when we get in camp. So the order that these road trip podcasts fall in might not be in the order that the bear camp episodes will be released in.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're all passionate about whitetails. Like, that's our number one. So I figured what we do is just record some of our road trip talk about whatever we talk about. I'd like to talk whitetails with you guys just to kick off the road trip. And kind of go from there. That's cool.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds real good.
Yeah, sorry about the road noise. We're in a big truck with big tires and hauling the podcast trailer. So it just is what it is. So hopefully we have good enough conversation where we can work past that. This is the earliest podcast we've ever recorded with Clint Casper, and we're all sober.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Good for us.
I won't have to take a piss here in about the next 35, 40 minutes because I don't have 5 Busch Lights in me already. So it's rather odd doing this right now.
Right. It does feel strange.
I'll try to work through it.
It's sad, actually. It's very sad.
It's almost like stage fright.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. It is. I almost feel like I don't know what I'm doing.
We were talking earlier, like 5 minutes into our road trip, like right when we got everything going, about big six-pointers and how a big six-pointer is kind of like, it's almost like everybody wants a big six, everybody wants a big eight, everybody wants like a big 10, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Big sixes are way more rare than like what a big eight is. Big eights are rare, but like I'm the only one in the truck who hasn't killed what I would consider a giant six. You were talking about your buck, which was how big, your big six pointer, Clint?
He's like right around 130.
That's a giant six pointer. And then Austin, you got one that...
Yep, Ross and I were hunting together. I think it was 2017, and got a chance to stick a good one. I think he was 118 or 119. He didn't have – his mass was real small. He was small on his mass, but just a cool shape to his main beams, and then tall, like 10 or 11-inch twos, and just a really cool-looking deer. Big old meaty neck on him.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that a lot of people that are like 120, 130, that's not that big. Well, you got to remember, you know, what do you got for beams –
You got four mass measurements. You got your G1s, your brow tines.
Yep.
You got G2s, and that's it.
Yep.
And so inside spread.
He was kind of short on his brow tines, so that didn't do him any favors either. But just more just the shape of that deer's rack. He was just a pretty wild-looking deer.
He was cool looking.
I was looking at him. He was right under the tree, and I looked down at Ross, and I'm like, what do you think? He's like, I'd already killed that deer three times by now.
I did send that on camera.
Well, it's a buck that right away might not look so appealing, but when you break it down, you're like, man, that's a big six. Think about it, points. It's like I already said, but I kind of want to hit that a little bit. Like, you got brow tines and G2s. That's all you got for point measurements.
Yep.
Yep.
You don't have G4s. You know, like, you're not going to get – I mean, what's the biggest six-pointer that you guys know of?
155, I think's the number one six.
Oh, that's a monster.
It's a monster, yeah.
And that was net.
Net.
Yeah, that's so official.
That thing's got to have massive brows, massive twos.
Oh, yeah.
Mass out the gills and inside spread.
And it was super wide. Yeah, like, mine's almost 24, and that's what –
that's big.
That's what gave me a lot was main beams and mass, because mine's not, like, gigantically tall.
What were the beams on it? Do you remember?
23 and 24.
See, that's
those pretty good.
Those are big beams, but that's not, I mean, I would almost think, I mean, that buck that did 155, it has to have 27 beams.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. I had big brows. I had seven, almost eight on the one, I think almost nine on the other.
Nice.
So, like, that was, you know, and then G2s are pretty solid and whatnot, but, yeah, I mean.
All right, I'm reaching out to listeners. If you send us, you know, private message us or email, whatever you're going to do, send us. If you know someone who's killed a big six and the score, just because I want to see. Mm-hmm. And what I might do in the comments when this episode releases, I might take all those photos and post them in the comments and be like, hey, you know, these are listener submissions.
That'd be pretty cool.
Big, you know,
big sixes are fun to look at.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, big eights are cool. Big sixes are even cooler because you just don't see as much. And so what would you consider, everybody in here, I'm asking the question, what would you consider a monster six? Like, what? At what point does it become like, I'm going to shoot that six-pointer?
Well, I tell you right now, I shot mine. I had pictures of mine, like, pictures and sheds for several years, two or three years. And actually, when I was hunting Showtime, the big unicorn buck, I was moving in, going to hang a set, and just hang and bang it out, working in on that deer, and what I thought was his bedding area. And I heard a bunch of grunting and running around, and this six-pointer I ended up killing the next year just about ran me over. Like, I tucked behind a tree, and he come flying. I mean, he was 3-4 feet away from me when he come by and just grunting his brains out. And I thought, man, one of these days, he gets a little bit bigger. I think he's worth shooting. Well, I got pictures of him, and sure enough, you could just look at him and know, hey, whoa, that's a big – he's a big six. He's tall. He's
right.
You could just tell. But
yeah, I think 115 inches, is that the turning point of a
giant.
Big six? I mean,
yep,
that's a big boy right there.
Big coos deer.
It's a big coos deer.
Big coos deer.
Big old 6-point coos deer. I mean, let's just do this. I kind of joined this like breakdown of different racks. Like, okay, you get to, let's go to an 8-pointer. I mean, we talked about the big eights a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Those are, everybody likes a big, clean, beautiful eight pointer.
You start getting into the solid 40s and eights. Those are very interesting deer to look at when they start getting into the 140, 145 range.
And they carry their frame like they're 160s.
Yep.
You know,
I've seen some 138s that look 150 just because they're so framey.
I got a couple of eights. I got an eight that nets 136 that I killed with my bow at 6 yards, and I remember when I shot him. Oh, man, who's
that's my one of my best friends, Adam Chaddock. He killed that buck on our home farm this year. It goes 119
as a six,
straight six.
That's a beautiful buck.
Oh yeah, pretty buck.
Clint showing sell picks, but yeah, you see, I mean, I have that buck that nets 136. When I shot him, I thought, you know, high 40s for sure. I mean, beautiful buck. He's one of my favorite deer, actually. He's real cool buck. Good brows, good eight, you know, good beams, and he's got two kickers that on each brow that are like mid center tine on the brows that shoot off the back.
Cool.
Nice.
It's pretty neat.
I like that term, Clint, framey.
Yep.
Yeah, framey's a good term. I'm big eights. I'm the dude who kills big eights that have big frames, and I don't complain. you know.
Yep.
Yeah, I wouldn't complain about that either.
No,
I love that deer you got on the wall. He's got, I can't remember if it's off his two or his three, but he's got the point that comes like straight 90 degree off of his tine.
Yeah,
he's wild looking.
That buck's 157 inch 8-pointer. But yeah, off his left three, he's got like a 6-inch kicker that doesn't split off it. It's just straight out parallel to the ground, straight off the front of his G3.
Yeah, he's a monster. That's a big eight.
So I was stoked on that one. That was a, man, that was a old, I did a, that was a hang and bang in 2012. I packed in like an alpha hang on, and going in, I went in the dark, hung that stand in the morning, and there was a barbed wire fence. Yeah, I had permission on both sides of the fence. It's just a fence in the center. And crawling over, I think I threw my stand underneath the fence and everything, my bow, and I jumped over the fence and caught my finger on a chunk of barbed wire and shredded the end of my finger up on that galvanized, and that's a son of a bitch. It gets all swollen. So I was bleeding like a son of a gun in the stand that morning when I shot that deer.
A little tetanus to start the day.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, kind of neat, though. But, yeah, that's one of my favorite eights. And creepy, well, I'll have that mount back by the time from Old Barn. By the time we get back from this trip, at him and my 10-pointer from this year.
That'd be nice.
Creepy's looking sweet, man. I'm pumped to put him with my other two big eights.
Yeah, he's gonna make a hell of a display. That deer is not really comparable to anything else that I've seen. Just the formation of his main beam, the way he's got that twist in his beam is just pretty wild.
And his hide is so strange, man. He's got like black tipped hair.
Yeah.
And his an abnormally white face. It's like the contrast of his face is just so strange.
Yeah, it's going to look good on the wall, man. It's going to be a really, really cool piece.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited about that. How big? You have a couple monster eights, Austin.
Yeah. The same year I shot my first double drop, I shot a deer that I called the Bluff 10, I don't know what it was, a week or 10 days after that. And he's technically a 9, but his 4 on the one side is like an inch and a half long.
Yeah.
And he went 158 official. That was my guy that scores for Buckmaster, scored him. He was right at 158 gross green. So he's basically 155, 156 inch 8-pointer. He was a nice big frame 8. I think he was 21 wide, 5 inch bases, like 7 or 8 inch brows, had nice brows.
Is that the buck that I always obsess over with the tall twos? That.
No, that was one I killed in 09. That deer with the tall twos, he had a 14-inch two on the one side.
14.
Yeah, right at 14. He was narrow, but he was right at, I grossed him at 155, and I think you scored him at like 153.
Oh, yeah. Ross, you need help driving? You good?
Yeah, I was just checking to see if we need to take that exit.
Oh, are we good?
I don't know.
Let me see.
I'd have to cross 5 lanes of traffic to get there.
Just keep going west. You'll be fine.
Sorry, Austin. I spaced out on you because I was wanting to know what he was talking about.
Yeah, I was looking at you and not looking at the road.
We're going south right now.
But yeah, he was a good one, too. That's a couple of bucks of mine, a couple of eights that were in the mid-50s, and then I got a couple, well, several right around 150. Like my unicorn buck was 153.
Oh, yeah, we got to turn around, Ross.
Okay.
Here. There's that. You got 1.2 miles. You got to turn around. Here you go, Austin. This is real time right now. Yeah, that buck, I obsess over that deer. I don't know why that one there's a ton of great deer in your collection, Austin, but that's the one that catches my eye.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites. He looks really cool. And actually, that deer that I shot this year, my first big buck, he's technically an 8-point mainframe. He's got a couple inside tines on the left side, but he's technically an 8-point mainframe, but he's got 22 or 3 inches of junk. He was 170, 170 or 171.
That's a stud, man. I think this is your exit up here, Ross.
Right on.
Yep.
You got any big eights, Clint, like that pop out at you? Or?
It'd be my second gross Booner. He's a mainframe 8.
No kidding.
He went 174 with 6 inches of his main beam busted off, but his one beam was 25. The other one would have been right there at 25. But
that's a big 8.
13, 14-inch 2s and 3s and 9-inch brows, a couple of stickers and some junk and stuff. But he's just a big, big giant mainframe. I killed him in gun season. Killed him in...
with a bow?
Yeah. Oh, man, that's been a while.
That's a big boy, man.
That's been a long time, yeah. That's been a way long time ago, back in 2000, like 13 maybe, really? Something like that, yeah.
Ross, your 200 inchers, are they mainframe 10s or what are they?
My two 100 inchers?
Yeah. No, you're, is that what I said? Did I say two 100 inchers?
100 inches on each side.
So they're both, well, the one's mainframe 9 and the other one's mainframe 8. Yeah, he's mainframe 8.
With his junk.
But he's got junk everywhere. He's got two tines on the inside of his main beams, like past his twos, between the threes, twos and threes. And they're both like 10 or 11 inches and just big mass on them. And they hook up just like a rack inside a rack.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, he's cool looking. But my biggest straight up 8, I guess, would have been that Flyer 2 buck that Austin filmed me shoot.
Yeah, it's a beautiful buck.
He had, he was mainframe 159 and some change.
Oh, no kidding.
And
that's
really
a big
deceiving,
boy, man.
He's deceiving to look at on pictures and video, but you get your hands on him, he just keeps growing. He's cool looking.
Ross was talking about passing that deer that year. I'm like, if I am sitting in the stand with you and that deer walks by, we're not passing that deer.
I just couldn't age him, man.
Just do an executive order.
That was a good call, Austin.
Hey, we got this biker here to our left that's like we're sitting here at the stoplight ready to turn, and I saw him look at the podcast trailer.
And now he's pissed because I'm blocking his...
Yeah. And then he looks at us. We all have headsets on.
That's it.
That's your big 8?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big boy. Big brows. I wish we could video this and show these pictures at Clint's show.
That's awesome.
I wish this light would turn green.
The Geyer buck is a mainframe 8, 191-inch mainframe 8.
Yeah, that's
8.
Dumb.
Clint got to see him yesterday for the first time.
So framey. My gosh.
Framey is such a good word for that.
I like that a lot.
He's, insane inside. Yeah, that's a big 8. I love big 8s, man. Like
that's my favorite.
It's such a classic look. I've talked about it before when I have that painting in my house. It's called the Great 8. It's that big, clean 8-pointer that's just walking through like a old log road.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's probably what made me be lucky for big 8s. So, but got to love it, man. And big 10s are a different story. You know, when you hit the big 10s, it's, you know, you got deer that are touching the 60s, 70s, and bigger mark more consistently with that typical frame.
Helps having that fourth tying up for sure.
right. And I got a couple good 10s that go that touch 150, but I don't have like a big 10 pointer. That is a big 10 pointer for me. I'm not saying that it's not.
I was gonna say I would consider that a big 10.
Yeah, it is a big 10. It is, but I don't have a buck that's like, I don't have a one high 60s 10, 70s 10.
I've got a 70-10, but he's got a really short little three.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just a little nub.
To touch 170 as a clean, typical frame buck, you got to have big fours.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? That's what'll give a lot of those deer away. When you see a deer that's got like...
Yeah, I'm sorry. I said three. It's a four. His four's a little short dick bull thing.
Yeah, that's what'll cut
hey,
you short on a lot.
Leave Steve out of this.
Yeah. Steve's not here. It's not nice to talk about him.
72B is what you're looking for, Ross.
Right on.
We're in Des Moines.
Steve sucks.
I think my biggest typical 10 mainframe deer was the second buck that I shot with a bow, and he grossed like 167.
Yeah,
and his net typical score was 155. But
yeah,
that was in 2000, and I haven't killed a bigger one than that since. It's hard to get up there and hit that 170 typical.
Mm-hmm. They don't come around too often.
No.
My buddy Jason Enders, he's a Whitetail Properties agent. Back when I hunted Fulton County, Illinois, all the time, he killed a buck that netted 174. He shot with his bow, and that thing just
typical 10.
Typical 10.
5x5. Wow,
damn!
It is beautiful.
That's a whole another level there.
It's a beautiful buck. I remember him.
Like, I bet that frame is stupid.
It's the most beautiful buck that you ever. The tines are thick on it. Yeah. Like, you know, that doesn't count for score, which sucks sometimes. But
makes them look so much bigger, though.
Dude, yeah. Heavy mass, like, good shape, heavy beams, big, long beams, tine. It's got to have everything if you're netting 174, you know.
Yeah, all-American whitetail.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's the buck that you would draw if you're going to draw a dream typical buck, you know.
Yep. It's like a hot girl with pretty feet. That's not really going to do anything for you, but it just looks nice. It's just part of it.
It's better to have.
Yeah, it's better to have, yeah. You don't want her to peel her socks off and be like, oh, God, what we got going on there?
Yikes.
Yikes.
Little Blackfoot.
Yeah, no good, no good.
Hate to see it. You hate to see it. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd love to kill a buck that's going to touch that set. What do we got to go straight now for
4,180 miles.
Yeah, 4,180 miles.
We're good.
We got 15 hours and 37 minutes.
Oh, what's it say?
Almost
we're,
there.
We're on this for quite a while then.
Yep.
No more turns or jukes or...
Should just merge back into 80 West here. I love how everyone's just listening to us.
Right.
Direct.
Sorry, guys and girls.
Children of all ages.
Yeah, we got 1,059 miles left.
Oh.
If we drove straight through, we'd get there at 1:26 a.m.
Yeah, we're basically there.
Yeah, we dude, this is easy. Yeah, yep, 131 miles for you got to worry about anything.
Okay.
Easy, easy.
Unreal.
Unreal. We could take a... We could take add an hour to our trip and stop through and see the Buckstorm boys in South Dakota if we wanted.
Mm.
But they're not that cool, so we won't do that. But anyway, yeah, I mean, what's your guys' dream? Clint, if you were going to kill your dream buck, I mean, you got...
I think you just posted this question.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
On mm-hmm. Facebook. You so know, describe your dream deer.
Yeah.
What would it be for you, Clint? You got one, but I consider a dream buck already, but...
I mean, if I had to, honestly, I would love to kill a straight, like what we just talked about, just a straight, typical 5x5 or a 6x6 that's like up in that, you know, high 70s, low 80s. Just, I mean, yeah. I just think those deer look, you know, 200 plus as a typical. I mean, they're yeah. just, you know, just clean, giant. I screwed up on one 6 years ago, hit him in the shoulder, just... Dead nuts, drilled him in the shoulder, 37 yards. I mean, I could still tell you what color boxers I was wearing that day, what I ate for lunch. Haunts me to this day, but that deer would have went, he would have went 180s as a straight 6x6.
No
guaranteed.
Shit.
Wow. I'd bet my farm on it. Yep, 100%. Yeah, I mean, that'll haunt me. Yep, just, yeah, man, thought, you know, I don't know. I just... got too far forward and just, you know, let her rip, cut her loose. Shot felt great, everything felt great. I knew whenever it hit, I mean, I knew immediately what yeah. What I had done. And
that's a bad feeling.
Yeah, that was not a good it was not a good day in the neighborhood, not at all.
I think at some point everybody has those moments in the timber. You just never, you know, you'll never forget them.
Yep, humbling, that's for sure.
Yep.
I remember walking back to the truck that night, and I mean, it was, yeah, I was pretty much in tears.
Had
I was
a big
like,
old apple in your throat.
Oh, man, yeah.
That fucking sucks.
Yep, that was a bad one, no doubt. Yeah, I had him dead to rights. I mean, just, like I said, nothing, you know, he didn't duck me, just feeding on acorns, shit, you know, I mean, just one of them deals where...
It was a slam dunk, and it just went...
Backwards. Yeah, I mean, 37 yards. I mean, you know, I had buddies that are like, oh, man, that's still a long shot. I'm like, nah. I'm like, there's no jokes aside. I'm like, that's money. In the backyard, that's a no. There's, yeah, that's no brainer. I mean, I shouldn't have. There's no way that shot should have got fucked up. I think I rushed it a little bit as far as just
a lot
pin
of pressure, man.
Just pin placement. And I mean, it shot broke good, felt good. But like I said, I knew when I saw it cut loose where it hit, I was just like, oh, no.
Well, and, guys like us that spend as many hours in the timber as we do, when you get a 180-inch typical in front of you, you know what
yep.
you got standing there. I mean, that's
oh, yeah.
a deer you might see once a decade.
Yep.
You,
yeah.
you just don't see him.
It's well, easy to rush a shot
well,
or anything.
And that was a turning point for me on animals. That deer actually was a hard pill to swallow, but that was a turning point in the mental game for me on my shooting, as far as shooting
yeah.
at live animals and just forcing myself to
live mature animals too.
Yep.
I think that needs to be added.
You know, there. Just forcing myself. You know, the next year I had a similar scenario with Extra, my biggest buck. You know, at 191. I mean, I drew on him and actually let down because I had to get my shit together.
Yeah,
and,
there's a box blind right there.
Yep.
It's kind of funny.
But, yeah, so no, I mean, that was it was
drew
a tough
on that
one.
Buck and let down.
Extra, yep, 27 yards. I literally was, opening night, I literally was shaking so bad. I was like,
pull it together,
yep,
man.
I'm like, you cannot rush this. You got to regroup,
yeah.
let down, and got her back again and smoked him, you know, made it 60 yards downhill and flopped over, double-lunged him. But, yeah, if I would have rushed that first one, younger me would have definitely not. I wouldn't have let down.
Yeah,
I'd have been like, "Yep, nope." The limbs are bent back. We're gonna send it.
Yeah, yeah.
And from the previous year, man, it was. It's funny. It was. I was in the same tree.
No kidding.
Really?
Yep.
That's
yep.
awesome.
Same tree.
You're right in his little home turf.
Yep. That's, same tree.
That goes back to one of those things where I say, you had to be in certain situations to learn them.
Oh, yeah.
Learn them. Like, you know, you can tell listeners about that. Like, hey, like you've been there. You've been through that. A lot of it is you have to be through the agony of a situation like that.
I had the previous deer in my mind when I was getting ready to kill extra. I mean, like, I knew in the back of my head, like, okay, it's 1 year later, almost to the date. Like, in plain words, don't fuck this up. Like, here's your opportunity. Here it is. You know, this is an even bigger deer. Like, this is it. You know, don't make this count. Don't have a repeat of last year.
Well, that and it still is, even with experiencing a lot of that. Sometimes a deer that's in the 190s will make the guy that's been hunting for, name how long, make him forget a lot of shit he learned. And then it's just a different caliber of things. You know, we're not talking 130-inch deer here. We're talking pushing 200-inch deer. That'll test a man, anybody.
Yeah. We get to see 150s, 160s run around every year. But when you see that 180-inch typical in front of you, I mean, I've never seen a deer like that. That would be my rare animal.
I think my dream type buck. I think it would be cool to kill a buck that's a giant 6x6. Would be really cool.
That's what I would say is that's the deer I'm missing on my wall. I don't have a really big typical, and I'd just soon have a 6x6 as a 5x5. I like seeing that picket fence.
Yeah, for sure. Because I know when you see them, like if you're looking for them like an angle, like a 45, you see six on one and six on the other, and then crisscross. You know,
that's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time. It's
crazy.
It's a lot of love.
Crazy.
Especially, I mean, I think you got to have beams to have a big typical 6x6 frame too. And that's a specimen, man. They don't come around. You don't see them often.
It's hard to get that line of genetics floating around the farm. You get it for us. We got a bunch of 9-pointers trying to get that 9-point gene broke, but I can't bitch too bad about it because Showtime was a 9-point. So. There's just 9-pointers everywhere. Once in a while, I mean, we get like tall, narrow, and once in a while we get some wide bucks. But I don't know. It's kind of cool to see them all.
Yeah, I mean, I'll never complain. Like, you know, I'll shoot a big 9 any day. You know what I mean? But it's. I mean, you know, they just like you just said. Once a decade, you might see a buck that's a typical 180, and if that, I've been hunting. I haven't seen a buck that went 180s in the last 10 years as a typical.
Yeah.
You know?
You think about it, though, how that wind back time from that 180 typical and look at his whole life, how many other fawns were out there, same age as him, brothers, all other brothers from other mothers. more or less.
One of the rare times that's, like, applicable for real.
Yeah. but to think about how many trials and tribulations he had to go through to make it to that point just makes it even better. Like, between all the
Odds,
getting stuck in a fence or anything.
Not only do you have to have those perfect genetics to put on a typical 6x6 frame, which is a shot one in a million anyways, then you got to get the age and
right feed
the genetics the hunting pressure can't be too great and everything. All the chips have to fall into place to connect with an animal of that caliber.
Anything 170 or over, I don't know if I'm stretching this word miracle, but it's like a miracle of an animal. Like, it's not a common thing. Anybody that doesn't even deer hunt can see a 170 buck and be like, whoa,
that's a big buck.
Yeah, like it's majestic. That's a big turning point.
That's a top 5 specimen of the species for sure.
Yeah,
you hit,
I mean,
170 and up. I mean, there's
I mean, you got to have, like, the genetic has to be there. He's got to have age. He's got to be healthy. There's just so many stars that have to align.
He's got to have the right food, right feed.
Yeah. But then you go to, like, the Iowa Deer Classic or Illinois Classic or whatever, Illinois Deer and Beer, whatever. You go there, and then there's a pile of those deer.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're like, is it that rare? But it is, though.
Yeah, I think Iowa and Illinois, well, and Ohio, I mean, we're right in the – we're where we need to be to see those kind of deer.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe it'd be different if we had highly controlled farms where we could never touch the woods and manage and sit, you know what I mean?
Like,
but it's just, that's not really, it's not a reality, no matter what listeners want to think about some of the deer we've killed. I mean, obviously if you're listening, you're a supporter and, you know, you're going to back us and support us. We appreciate the fuck out of you for that. And I would do the same for our listeners. But there's some haters out there that might say, well, Clint Casper only kills a 190-inch deer because he's got this highly groomed farm. Well, you think You're going to sit there and tell me that Clint Casper doesn't know how to kill a big deer? You think he can't figure it out no matter where he goes? Like, someone's going to discredit the deer that Chandler's killed? Like,
all
right.
We're all fighting neighbors. I mean, everybody's got neighbors that are seeing the same deer that we are. It's just
a lot of my private may as well be public. Because if I don't have guys trespassing, I got guys running the fence lines. I got guys over, 20 yards away from me on the other side that's grunting and rattling and bleating every 5 minutes. And, I mean, you got 800 scent wicks hanging from trees. I mean, there's spots that literally in November, spots close to some of my private that would be worse than maybe some of the public that's around.
Right.
You know, I mean, and I've got some pretty good public around that I get to hunt and go on. And, I mean, there's actually some really good public not too far from me. There's literally sometimes I think less people on that than around the edges of some of my, private farms and stuff. And a lot of the farms I got small. You know, it's not like I've got 500-600 acre tracks. I mean, shit, I got a handful of my best properties. The biggest might be 140 acres.
Right.
Which is small in the grand scheme of things.
That one piece I was telling you about where I killed that that eight that was 136 that had the kickers off the back of his brows. I shot that buck on 25-30 acres of timber.
Yep.
And that's one of those pieces that in that timber, I mean, there's a field there, right? But there's probably, I don't know, I bet you there's 20 guys that have permission to hunt there that got permission 20 years ago that still think still, they have fresh permission.
Yep, lifetime slip. Slip assigned in 94 and they can just hunt it forever now.
And I'm not going to, the owner is a great dude and he's just an old school type guy and doesn't care, which is fine. You know, it's not my property. I can't control what happens. But I killed that deer there, and then my dad killed a good one on another piece not far that was a 142-inch 8-pointer. He literally shot that deer in a 2-acre patch of timber.
Yep.
And the following year, we went back in there to hunt it because we had lost everything else. I was like, well, this is here, and I'm going to hunt it. Dude, I think during firearm season, there's 8 trucks parked there on 25-30 acres of timber. And I've hunted it a couple times since, but since the owner said we were the first people to kill good bow bucks out of there in the last 25 years, the following year, it wasn't even worth going in.
Yep.
Because all those guys are like, oh, man. I heard rumor that they killed.
Oh, yeah.
There's got to be another one in there. Well,
once the word got out.
Yeah.
And, those small pieces, I mean, and I learned this years ago hunting with my good buddy Adam Hayes, because he's, made a living off of small pieces down around Columbus. I mean, that's where a lot of his 200s have come, little small chunks. But cool thing about them small pieces, I think, is if that buck's in there, you got such a high percentage play of seeing him. You might not kill him, but, if he moves on a 20-acre piece and you're in there and you can get in there and it's the right wind, the right conditions, your odds are really freaking good versus a 100-acre piece or a 200-acre piece.
That buck doesn't have 5 different ridges to bet on. Your odds of making the right call are a hell of a lot better on a 10 or 20.
Well, you got to be calculated.
Oh, yeah.
You better make your right call when you make your right call.
Well,
the right choice.
I've hunted some of those spots, and I've been pinned down in a tree for an hour after dark waiting on deer to funnel by, walk by, because you can't afford to blow them out of there, or then you're screwed the next couple days. You know what I mean? Like, it's a very touch-and-go thing hunting small pieces, but the one pro is, you've got a hell of a chance. If that buck's in there, and you're in there, and you play your cards right, if he moves in daylight, you're right there, man. Like, you're in the money, It's just a matter of a few things going your way, and you're going to get to bend the limbs back, hopefully.
Talk about a letdown when you get in there and you think you got all the cards laying on the table just like it need to be.
Yep.
And then it doesn't happen, and you're like, shit. Now I got to slip out of here and make a new plan for tomorrow.
Yep. For sure.
But
that's
what makes it fun.
Yep, that is the game.
I guess moral of the story is it doesn't take a 200- or 300-acre piece to hold a big boy. It's just whoever wants to go after it and figure out that deer and find where he's at. Sometimes you put that trail camera on or do a little scouting mission on a smaller piece or a piece that you would think has neighbors around it that are going to mess you up. Sometimes it's worth that extra look.
Yep.
Right. For
sure. Absolutely.
And other people's fuck-ups can pay off big for other people.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Yep.
It's like you got to know how – guys that are successful on whitetails are consistently successful on whitetails. I got to add that in because that changes things. Are kind of wired and calculated a little bit when the, in the moves. Like we're, a lot of guys that kill big deer aren't just doing shit out of for no fucking reason. Like it's
calculated moves,
right? And then those moves are, you know, compare those to what guys that hunt neighboring properties that bitch about what deer you killed.
Yep,
they're doing different things. And they're kind of more patternable, whereas, I don't know, you can kind of almost, like, work how you're going to hunt a property based off, like, what the neighbors are doing. Yeah. Like,
it's not always a bad thing to have some neighbors next to you.
Yeah.
To push those deer over onto you and let them get comfortable and, and then make your move.
And I, do you feel, so I did a I did the fall podcast a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about whitetail tactics, and the, they were asking some, I really enjoyed that podcast. I really liked those guys. Aaron and all that, they do a great job.
They do put out a nice podcast.
When I had a lot of fun on that show, and then I was like, hey, why don't you just jump right on my show? And it was like back-to-back we did it, so it worked out great. But they were asking some, like, whitetail, asked me whitetail questions when I was on their show, and I felt like a lot of my answers get repetitive when I do those types of podcasts. I still enjoy doing them, of course, but I just feel that I'll admit that, like, a lot of times I don't fucking know what's going to go on that season, and I figure it out on the fly every year. Which I guess I try to be as adaptable as I can and learn more, because every year is a little different, every deer is a little different. So it's kind of like that, I always say, the guess and check theory. I feel like, do you think a lot of guys are afraid to kind of admit that, or, and they want to just be like, nope, this is what I do? But I don't think that's fair to apply that across all your...
I think a lot of guys have a box, they don't like to leave the box, you know?
Right.
Well, I've done this for 10 years, it's worked 5 times, I'm going to continue to do that, even though that's the wrong move to make on this particular buck.
Yeah.
But that's what I've always done, that's what I know. I mean, I think a lot of people in general, in life, relationships, just in the world, they've got a box and they don't like to leave the box.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, this is what I know, this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
And they're not what you'd say, like, in a very, very adaptive person. And I think...
I think I'm only adaptive. I mean, I'm adaptive, but I think I'm most adaptive in my deer hunting.
Yep.
Because it's the forefront of what I do in my life.
I think if you look at, you know, your super successful bow hunters in any realm, whether it's whitetails, turkeys, western, big game, whatever, the one key trait between all of them will be they can adapt on the fly and figure shit out. And, I mean, I think...
Well, do you, I mean, let me ask you this then, Clint. Do you think, like, some years, okay, let's just use this year as an example or whatever year, like, next year, do you have a buck you for sure want to kill right now?
Yeah.
Okay, well then, fuck me then, huh? What about you, Austin?
But, like, last year, no. You know, like, last year it was...
Okay, because this year I don't. Like, I killed Creepy, and I killed that other 10. Those were the two deer I knew about. And I knew about Creepy from years prior, but that 10, I saw him early on and got on him and killed him within a few weeks.
Yep.
But, like, going into this year, some of my properties are kind of in the air, whether or not I'll have permission.
Yep.
I don't have a buck that I'm like, well, I have a pretty good idea what this one's doing. I got to just get in and figure out the fine details when I get in there. For me, I'm like, right now, I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. But I'm okay with that. I'm not freaking out. I don't have any sort of, like, anxiety over it. It's just I'm kind of used to that.
It's exciting, I think. I mean, I love hunting one specific buck, as do the rest of us four. I mean, we all fall into that trap.
It's rare I get that opportunity, though, because I don't have the property that will hold them like that.
You know, I love to hunt one specific buck, but I think it's fun when the pressure's off and it's just kind of a year of like, well, I'm just going to go and see what I can find, you know, and kind of just see what I can figure out.
That picture there is my buddy. My buddy just to the north on the other side of the ditch from me sent me that. He got that deer. He's been after him for a couple of years.
Well, that's a nice friend.
And we're hunting the same piece of ground, but it's just so big that he's over on his side. And look at that unicorn. So I'm wondering if he didn't. We don't know. But anyways, he's a potential.
On the docket.
He's a potential.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
A big boy, man. I don't want to say what I think he scores. I don't want to blow up your spot, but
he's probably genetically related to your first unicorn.
I'm guessing. But,
yeah, big frame.
There's
deer.
A couple of them out there, though. I mean, that I passed last year, got pictures of another one. Those are some cool pictures, too. He just got done breeding a doe, and he's a, man, he's a mid-50s, 60, 10-point, straight-up, just awesome-looking deer.
Huh.
He's going to be real good this year, I hope. So
that's the one you're kind of got in your
chamber. I got two or three of them that I know are going to be floating around back there. But, man, backing up a little bit to the deer... What, your dream deer to kill?
Yeah.
It's so easy to, for me, I guess, perfect straight up 170, 180 would be awesome. I just, have a hard time getting past the deer that I've screwed up in the past, shouldered or blew a chance on that I thought, I mean, I'd already started picturing that deer on the wall before the shot goes off.
Kegs were tapped, fireworks were going off before the arrow was even sent. Yeah, I've been there. I've done
that. Austin filmed me miss a 12-inch drop time. I wish in the worst freaking ass way that I had that back. Oh, that hurt.
Oh,
and
God,
that's
got
to sting a little.
You know, he's a 140-inch deer, but he had a huge club with a 12-inch hanging off.
12-inch club.
Yeah, and the cool part about that deer, this kind of ties into everything we've said so far, but cool thing about that deer is he always lives to the west of me, and I only ever get pictures of him late season when it is brutally cold.
Yeah.
And we're getting close to the tail end. Mm-hmm. I get pictures of him. And these other guys have been getting pictures of him all year. And I had never seen him. And Austin and I sitting up in the coop.
We had got to see him from the road a few times.
Yeah,
leaving your house at night, your hired man, seen him, once or twice? I got to see him once. He's feeding, what was it, probably 3/4 of a mile from where we hunted him.
So it's like there's probably a very slim chance in hell that deer's ever going to come back here and hit this food plot.
Yeah.
But we're sitting up here because it's colder than balls and we're in the coop. So, and he shows up. And it had been raining and freezing and... We walked in and he picked up our footsteps and got nervous, and then we both mapped at him and I sent an arrow, but I ended up missing him, but never saw that deer again, the neighbor ended up picking his sheds up and it was a 12-inch drop.
No kidding.
Yeah, that I got pictures of that and of the video and everything. That's a fun video to watch if you want to throw up.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to get that to put her up on the YouTube or something like that.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than...
The clean miss is all on film, huh?
Oh, yeah.
I'll title it... I don't know. I was going to go somewhere dark with it, but I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Well, Ross's attempt to drop a drop time.
Yeah. So it goes back to, you got neighbors pressuring, you got outfitters coming, out-of-state guys coming in and pushing and the pressure comes.
Fuckers all from that, Chicago coming down.
All that
down.
Pressure falls off after the rut and you get into that cold. You know how I like to talk late season?
Well,
that's where if that buck makes it through, you start getting some roamers. You start getting these bucks that you are in the outskirts might start visiting you if you got the right food sitting there.
And
it's so damn cold that most other guys aren't going to be there.
Yeah.
So
right.
You got a good chance in the late season.
Yeah, Ross, you and Clint are late season guys. I know, Austin, you've had a lot of success late season.
The more I hunt, the more value I can see in keeping a tag in your pocket. You know, if you're
Can't make it past November 5th before he's tagged out.
That's not a bad thing.
I'm too big of a fan of the rut, man.
I wish I had that problem.
I like targeting a certain specific buck, but I love the rut too much. I see a big one running by me in the rut, I can't help it.
It's a beautiful time of year. Well, one, it just feels good out. You just want to be out hunting at that time of year.
I love the rut, but I hate the rut.
Yeah.
Playing the specific buck game that I'm usually playing. Yeah. Oh, my God.
You talk to any big whitetail killer, and that's kind of like, that's the tone or the tune that they're whistling. Cause
just anxiety of where's he at? Yeah. Where could he be? Where may he be?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I had that anxiety with Creepy, I didn't see Creepy until Black Friday. I hunted
him. Oh, no kid.
He came in. He was off the map while. I honestly think he laid low. And
he didn't have to go anywhere. He just walked into the bedroom and just laid down.
I think when the year before I killed him, I never saw him once. Got a lot of trail cam pictures of him. But I think, honestly, he laid low in his little nook that he was in. I found his shed outside that nook. And then when I saw him Black Friday, a couple weeks after I shot my other 10, I saw him come out of what I would consider his little nook. I'm like, man, I wonder if he just laid low in there all the time. And I don't know.
Probably.
I know that
he knew where your cameras were at and stayed away from them.
Probably.
That's a good possibility.
I mean, that's a thing. That's a debatable topic.
They could be
topic.
There the whole time, and you're just scratching your head thinking, where in the hell's he at?
Yeah.
Well, he was there. He just moves at night and stays away from your cameras.
Yeah, he's on the backside of the tree. Andre's told me one-on-one, I think he probably mentioned it a little bit of the podcast, that he's seen bucks see a camera and divert.
Yep. Yeah.
They'll create a trail around that camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it's a good thing to leave a camera up in a spot like that because of those reasons. Unless you're trying to, you got some backwards game plans and you're using trail cameras to revert a deer into
a
different direction.
Deer in, yeah.
That's a good plan.
I'm sure guys have done it.
Scare all the deer over to a different spot.
I'm sure guys have done it and didn't know they did it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
That type of thing. I don't know. I like this. This conversation's good. Just let it roll and see where it goes. Anything whitetails, right, is just so intriguing. There's so many layers to it and just directions you could go with it. I got some topics I'm thinking of now, but I want to save them for another road trip podcast. I don't know. I kind of want to close this one out because then we can regroup. And we got a drive. I imagine we'll do a few more of these on this trip and tons and bear camp coming up here.
Yep.
And,
it's a good one.
Well, cool.
Absolutely.
Anybody want to shut her out to go shoot your bow? Or do you want me to just do it? You want Daddy to do it?
You want Daddy to do it?
Go ahead, Daddy.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Road Trip Podcast. Thanks for sticking with us. You know what to do. We love you. Go shoot your bow. Peace.